I was just wondering about the difference between the fetter of self and the one of conceit.
Uh-huh.
And kind of where does it stop the, you know, kind of desire to be personally known and cared for and that kind of thing. Any distinct, something about the two.
That's a good question. The Sakkaya Ditti, the first of the ten fetters, self-view, that's the whole sort of bundle of very tangible things about me and mine. My name, my age, my livelihood, emotional needs, the kind of thing you're describing, the need to be recognized or cared for. I would say that's a lot of the kind of characterization of that is in the realm of self-view, of Sakkaya Ditti. The Asmimana is more the unspoken, much less tangible sense of when we think I hear, rather than the content of what's being heard, it's the sense of a me here who's doing the hearing. Or when you say, I need, not the details of what is needed, but the sense of an I that is missing something. And the most helpful sutta that characterizes or talks about the distinction between the two, I find, is called the Kemaka Sutta. And it was about an elder monk, not an elder nun. Again, it's a kind of a unique sutta where this elderly monk is on his deathbed, and his other friends, other elder monks in the monastery, send a messenger over to him as his life is ebbing away. And so they ask the messenger to inquire, have you reached the end of the path? Have you reached arahantship? And then the messenger goes along and asks the question, and he says, no, I haven't. And the messenger goes back and says, he says he hasn't. And they say, then I'll go back and ask him, in what way has he not reached the end of the path? And it's a kind of like a joke, and it's a sort of Pali humor. It kind of keeps going back and forth and back and forth. Yeah, in what way? and what are the things you're still hanging on to? And so there's about three or four different trips that this junior monk has to make back and forth between Kemaka and his friends. Eventually, Kemaka gets completely fed up and gets up. He says, they're never going to stop bothering me with these questions. I can't even die in peace. Doesn't say that, but it's my elaboration. But he gets up from his deathbed and goes off to see these companions of his. And then there's this very interesting dialogue. And the imagery he gives when he's talking to his friends, he said, there's absolutely no doubt whatsoever that the five khandhas are not self. You know, this body, the personality, thoughts and feelings, emotions, memories, ideas. That's really very, very, very clear. There's no attachment to the five khandhas in the ordinary everyday sense. But still, there is lingering around the five khandhas this sense of I the experiencer, I the decision maker, I the one who's feeling. And so that I-ness, that ahankara among I-making and mind-making is around. And the image he uses, so it's like a flower. You can smell the fragrance of the flower, but you can't tell where the fragrance comes from. Is it from the pollen? Is it from the nectar? Is it from the petals? Is it from the anthers or the different parts of the flower? You can't tell whether, you can smell it, but you can't tell where it comes from. It's in exactly the same way that even though there's no attachment or identification with the five khandhas in an ordinary everyday sense, but yet there's this I, me, my feeling. And very interestingly, he realizes arahantship as he's making that explanation to his friends. So he's unique, I think, unique in realizing arahantship, listening to his own Dhamma talk. And also some of his friends became arahants as well. So it's a very happy ending. So that's called the Kemaka Sutta. And I think you find it in the connected discourses. I think it's in the section on the five khandhas, if I remember correctly. I couldn't tell you which number, but in the Khandavaga of the connected discourses. So that gives you a bit of a picture of the distinction between the two. So that Asmimana is basically formless, but it's that I, me, my feelings, a sense that not even articulated is a thought, like I am the owner of this body. it's not even a conceptual thought, but there's this an unspoken, a kind of a wordless, this is my body, or I'm hearing this sound, you know, I feel this sensation, this, I remember. And so, you know, if it's spelled out as a conceptual thought, you know, I remember last week, then you kind of, in a way, that's highlighting that I feeling. But I would say Asmi Mana is more, it's insidious and it's potent, because most of the time it's not articulated. It's just that an unspoken assumption of, you know, I remember, I think, I feel, this is my life, my body, my possessions. There's a me here that's the doer, the owner, the experiencer, the decision maker. So insight meditation, initially, a lot revolves around the Sakkayaditti, letting go of the more obvious characteristics of personality and individual story and emotional attachments and needs and preferences and so on. But as the practice of vipassana deepens and strengthens, then it's more dealing with that insidious or invisible, that kind of, what's that smell? You know, that the kind of subtle aroma of eye making, mind making. And so it takes quite a lot of investigation. And so in that area, they're particularly using the reflective inquiry, kind of trying to highlight that eye making and mind making through reflective thought. They say, well, who is it that's the owner of this thought? Yeah. If there's a me that's asking this question, what does that me look like? Where is it? What qualities does it have? You know, so that it's a means to illuminate those very subtle and insidious tendencies of the mind.